Bridges.
Okay. Hello. Boker Tov, the new page is on the chair by the door. Okay. Bakasha. Tov, Boker Tov. We spent 2 weeks discussing the mitzvah of Zachorat Yom Shabbat Dekacho. That basically was the mitzvah of Kiddush Friday night. On a rabbinic level, it spans out to Kiddush in the morning too, which we call Kiddushei Rabbah. According to the Rambam, even at Sudash Lishit, there's supposed to be a cup of wine. The Yemenites still abide by that. Most Ashkenazim have waived that cup of wine by Sudash Lishit. So much so that some Ashkenazim don't even bother eating Sudash Lishit. But the Rambam believed that every Sudat Shabbat should begin with a Baruch Pe'er Gafen. But we, in the morning, referred to the Kiddush as Kiddushei Rabbah. I spoke about it a few weeks ago. What that means, the great Kiddush, where it's really the small Kiddush. But whereas we're in the subject of Shabbat, so much later down the list of the Rambam 613, but moving over to the don'ts, the lo ta'aseh, so it's mitzvah 321. That's out of 365. So it's pretty much towards the end of the listing. The Rambam reminds us that there's another prohibition of Shabbat, but it's not to be confused with the malachot, with the forbidden activities of Shabbat, but it's the whole notion of tchum Shabbat, of not walking a specific distance outside one's home domicile, but it's halachically interpreted as outside the limits of a city. So within a city, within the city limits, a person can walk on Shabbat and Yom Tov. So what I said, whatever I'm going to say now is going to be relevant for Yom Tov as well as Shabbat. One is permitted within the confines of a city to walk a million miles, because you're not leaving the city. The whole prohibition of Tchum Shabbat has to do with walking outside the city. And for those of us back from the Jewish homeland of the United States, which meant New York City, because we know that the Hudson River was there to divide the Jewish community between the New Yorkers and the out-of-towners. And the out-of-towners didn't make a difference where you came from. It could have been Chicago, Miami, Los Angeles. Oh, say the Tadarba. Any of the cities, they were out-of-towners. It was like a different breed. And only when I went to Yeshivat HaRetzion in the Gush did I discover that the out-of-towners were actually very nice people. And,
thank you.
No, we didn't know that beforehand. But the New Yorkers would hardly leave New York, except for the 2 months of the summer, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu went on vacation in the Catskills, and that's why the Jews followed suit and went up to the Catskills. And there, we all of a sudden became sensitized to the issue of Tchum Shabbat. Because if you were in a hotel or a bungalow colony and you wanted to walk on Shabbat on the open road to perhaps a neighboring bungalow colony, but the neighboring bungalow colony might be 3 miles away, you most probably couldn't walk it because of the prohibition of Tchum Shabbat. So to this end, we're going to talk about my earliest experience of Tchum Shabbat. What predates my days in the Catskill Mountains. But we would go on the George Washington Bridge, which connected the neighborhood of Washington Heights and the state of New Jersey. It was told to us that you could walk on the pedestrian walkway up until the second tower of the George Washington Bridge. That was the measurement. And the measurement is from the last house of the city limit. And there was a lighthouse that was from the police patrol. So that was like the last point of residence, and it was under the bridge already, and from that point it was measured up until approximately the second tower. And I remember the incident where in the city of Fort Lee, which is the very first town that you hit in New Jersey, before New Jersey became Ir Ve'em B'Yisrael, before there was an Englewood and a Teaneck and all these other wonderful communities. So Fort Lee was the first place where Jews from Washington Heights broke out of the shell and they started living across the other side. There was a Brit on a Shabbat. They did not yet have a moel on their side of the river, so the moel from the Breuer's community of Washington Heights was willing to walk over the bridge. They invited him for Shabbat. They should make Shabbat with them, but he opted to walk over the bridge. But the problem was Tchum Shabbat. So he prepared an Eruv Tchumin on the bridge, which is basically putting together a quasi-meal of sorts, a little sandwich of sorts, and putting it down on Friday, an Erev Shabbat. You make a bracha and a little text, almost like Erev Tavshilin, and it allows you to walk another distance. We'll see what the distance is. We grew up with 2,000 amot, which translates to about 1.6 kilometers in our roads here in Israel, which is not a tremendous distance. You can walk 1.6 kilometers if you're healthy and know how to walk, less than 40 minutes or half an hour, or even less if you walk fast. So it's not a tremendous distance. And this Erev Tchumin will double your ability, and that was enough to have the Moel get to the other side on Shabbat. I had an occasion to actually perform an Erev Tchumin when I was once a guest speaker for Pesach at one of the hotels in the Dead Sea area. So those are familiar with the Ein Bokeik area of hotels. So there's an area that you come to Ein Bokeik, you see two dozen hotels, one sitting on top of the other. And then if you continue on the road, all of a sudden it's empty territory for about 3 kilometers. And then all of a sudden there's another area of hotels where another half a dozen or a dozen hotels sitting one on top of the other. But from one place to the other, it's really empty territory. So I was a speaker at one particular place, and some of my friends from Zurich were spending Yom Tov in a place, an hotel in the other area. And I don't know why, but they thought it would be nice to walk and hear a shiur of mine in the afternoon on Yom Tov. So I told them that we have to prepare an Erev Tchumin for that, because I went in the car and I measured it out, and I realized that it would work. And there were benches, like park benches, on the way for people strolling who could take a little bit of a rest. So I measured out the 1.6 kilometers. We got to a bench, and under the bench, I placed this little meal here. Said the bracha and everything. And it makes not a bit of a difference if either the birds come or somebody else snatches it away. Once you've done it, the Erev is there. And you don't have to have a mashgiach watching the sandwich for the whole Shabbos. It's an Erev. It's an Erev Tchumin. It allows a person to walk double the... here was... The sum total was less than 2 times the distance. So, the people were home clear. They were able to walk it. So, the shiur entitled, Don't Walk, comes from the Pasuk, Al Yetzei Ish Mim Komo B'Yom HaShvi'i.
So, can you double the error?
Can you double it? No. You get it. It's a one-shot deal. That's it. If you can't go beyond the... parameter of the second distance. And that's it. You get a one-shot deal of expansion.
Only food availability at that stop. Food, whether it's a box or a person or anybody.
If it gets destroyed, it's of no consequence. The point is that you placed it there with the intention that if you would set up shop there on Shabbat, you'd have something to eat. That's really, it's a symbolic type of assuming residence. It's a residency requirement. And that's not my phrase. The halakha calls it kone shvita. Shvita with a taf. It means you're sitting there. You're resting there. It's a place of residence. I mean, it's pretty feeble residence. It's a park bench and a little sandwich there. But it passes from the halakhic standpoint. That's what it is. So the issue of Tchum Shabbat comes up in Parshat Bishalach. This is way before, it's before the giving of the Torah. So before the giving of the Torah, when we hear Zachot Yom Shabbat Tekadsho, we already hear that the seventh day is going to be special. It's going to be different. Because man is going to fall in the desert. And Am Yisrael is taught that on Friday they're going to receive 2 portions. Used the phrases Lecha Mishnah, and from here the term 2 challahs, Lecha Mishnah. And on Shabbat it won't fall. And therefore, al yetzei ish mimkomo b'yom shvi'i. Don't bother going outside from your house on the seventh day because there's no mun to be collected. Whatever meant going to work in the midbar, it was collecting mun in the morning. That's what it was. Today we collect money, but the who knows? I have to talk to Avshalom Kor if there's no connection. if there's no connection. Right? Interesting. Right. We collect a lot of money. Money in plural, right? Monies. So that's what it meant going to work. So the Torah says, don't go to work. Now the question is that a pasuk that's limited to the biblical narrative of Parshat Bishalach? That for Am Yisrael in the Midbar, they're told, man is not going to fall on Shabbat, therefore don't bother going in to search it out. Or is this pasuk to be lifted out of context and placed upon the listing of 613 mitzvot, of the 365 don'ts, and even though it has nothing to do with searching for man, nevertheless, al yetze ish mimkamo bayam shvi'i. So what's the answer? Is it biblical, or is it linked to the biblical narrative only? And what we have today of Trum Shabbat is a, let's call it a rabbinic add-on, a takanat chachamim. So you should know the answer to these kind of questions. It's a machloket, right? It's both. It depends who you asked. Did you ask the Rambam, or did you ask the Ramban? So I'll jump a little bit ahead. The Rambam includes this in the 613. And this you could have guessed, because if we're doing the Rambam's Book of Mitzvot this year, and I'm talking about it, so obviously it's there. But the Ramban very, very forcefully suggests that there is no such halachic animal in the Torah called Trum Shabbat. Everything we know about Trum Shabbat is only rabbinic in origin. There's a concept called asmachta. It's like alluded to. You can pin it on the psukim in Parshat Bishalach, but that's not a source. Asmachta is not a source. It's just like the Gemara says, Esther min haTorah minayin. From where do you know the story of Esther from the Chumash? Because in Parshat Vayelech it says, Vanuchi haster astir panai. God says, come one day and I will hide my face. Astir, Aleph Samach Tav Resh, is the same letters as Esther. So it's a very nice drasha. But that's not a source. Nobody in a million years would say that from that pasuk in Parshat Vayelech we have the Yom Tov of Purim. It's just, now that we know we have Purim, and now we know that the heroine is Esther, and now all of a sudden, it reflects an era of the end of days of prophecy, and they did not have prophecy, as Mordechai says, Umi Yudea in Le'et Kazot Igat Malchut. Who knows if this may not be the reason that you were chosen to be the queen. You can see he's like groping in the darkness. Maybe this is the reason. Maybe we figured it out because of you're in the right place, the right time when we needed you. And who knows? Maybe this was God's plan. Maybe not. But he's not a prophet. He doesn't know. He's not absolute at all. That's called Hester Panim. God is not obvious at all, but playing from behind the scenes. And that's what the Torah says, there will be such eras. V'anochi haster astir panai. So Chazal say, you see this pasuk? That's the Purim story. But that doesn't mean the Purim mitzvah emanates from that pasuk. So according to Ramban, al yetze ish mimkomo b'yom shvi'i does not radiate a mitzvah at all. And if Chazal instituted a concept of not walking certain measure of distance beyond the city as an institution, they may have pinned it on the pasuk simply as an allusion, but nothing more than that. A remez and asmachta. But the Rambam believes categorically it's a mitzvah. And from here we have this very, very big dispute. That's dispute number one. And dispute number two is, let's assume it's a mitzvah. What is the distance? The Torah says, al yetze ish mimkomo. So where is mimkomo? Where is your place? You stepped out of your door onto the street. Have you left your place? What is the halachic definition of your place, mimkomo, in relationship to this pasuk? And that too is subject to a machloket. And until you study this in the Rambam, you'd never in a million years think that it's anything other than 2,000 amot. And how much is amah? That's a machloket between the Chazon Ish and Rav Baruch Na'er. However you figure it out, it translates, at least according to one of the opinions, to 1.6 kilometers. But it's 2,000 amot. We all grew up with that number as 2,000 amot. But maybe 2,000 amot is only a rabbinic translation. And biblically, perhaps the distance is much greater. But our rabbis wanted to limit it for a variety of reasons. Or perhaps alpayim amah, 2,000 amot, is precisely the biblical definition of distance, even though it doesn't say so in the Chumash. At least it doesn't say so here in Parshat Bishalach. They may be somewhere else in the Chumash. there is a an association to Trum Shabbat where it says specifically 2,000 Amot. So all this is our concern today. So let's take a look at the first source. It begins from Sefer Chinuch, but we're going to get to Sefer Mitzvot, the Rambam's Book of Mitzvot, where it becomes a very exciting chapter in the Rambam's Sefer Mitzvot, because he somehow reveals things about the nature of his book through this mitzvah. So the author of Sefer Chinuch, and he's like 100 years after the Rambam, he's the student of the Ramban from Barcelona, Spain. We don't exactly know his name, but nevertheless we refer to him as the author of the Sefer Chinuch. And strangely enough, what he does is takes the listing of the Rambam, the 248 positives and 365 negatives, and he mixes up the list completely. His spread is Parshat HaShavua. And the reason that he does it, because he says in the introduction, he wants to prepare for his sons, apparently they're teenagers, some material for Parshat HaShavua. So he's less concerned with the logical sequential order that the Rambam provides in his book. His order is completely mishmash from the Rambam, but it is an order. It's an order of Parshat HaShavua. So that's why he talks about it in Parshat B'Shalach. Vayi B'Shalach. Yesh ba mitzvah lo tasei achad. There's one negative mitzvah. Vehi shenimna'anu shelo lelechet b'Shabbat chutz likvulim yidu'im. This is the prohibition not to walk on Shabbat beyond the known limits. The known limits. He doesn't get into the details yet. Gives you a broad definition of the mitzvah. Interestingly, someone who's a student of the Ramban opts to bring the mitzvah according to the Rambam. Why does he do that? The answer is that in the 13th century, 100 years after the Rambam's listing became so authoritative that it became impossible to challenge it as the opening number. If you want to talk about mitzvot, the first thing, your opening number is, this is what the Rambam says. Now, you want to suggest that my Rebbe, the Ramban, took issue. That's fair game. That's okay. But the presentation of the material is all Rambam. The Rav son-in-law, Rav Professor Isidor Twersky, Zichron Lebracha, in one of his last articles, talks about the fact how the Rambam became so accepted early in the game. The Rambam dies in 1204 on the 20th of Tevet, but it doesn't take long until the Rambam becomes universally accepted in certain areas of Torah and thought. Even though previously there may have been differences of opinion. So the fact that the Ramban is 100 years after the Rambam, less than 100 years, but he's after the Rambam, doesn't mean the Ramban cannot argue with the Rambam. He does it all the time. But the list that's presented is the Rambam's list. So the author of Sefer Chinuch, a student of the Ramban, will present the list of 613 in accordance with the Rambam, and he will make mention each time, but the Ramban argues on this point each time. So he says, "Shneimar," as it says, "Al yetzei ish mikomo b'yom shvi'i." This is the pasuk in Parshat B'Shalach. Uva perush alav shemikomo, and the explanation, the oral law explanation on what does it mean, your place, mikomo, nikra kol she'eno marchik yoter mishlosh parsaot chutz le'ir. He says it's three parsaot outside of a city. How much is a parsa? The ha'parsa arba milim. V'hamil alpayim ama. Let's just do the math now. So how much is yoter mi shalosh parsaot chutz le'ir? It's 24,000 amot. 2,000 means 12 times 2,000. 12 times 2,000, says the Sefer Chinuch, is the biblical distance. You know how much that is? That's walking 10 kilometers. How many of us can walk 10 kilometers on a particular day in an open road? Fine. Faye, me, I can do it, thank God. There are some people who can do it. Some people can do it. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I walked more than once from Ramat Eshkol to Katamon on Shabbat. Okay, so once it took 3/4 of an hour, it was a little bit more downhill. Once it was a little more uphill, it took almost an hour. But that's a few good kilometers. That's a few good kilometers from Ramat Eshkol to Katamon. So, okay, not everybody can walk it, but this is the distance. Where does he get that from? Where does he come from? We'll see. And then he says, Modedin misvat habayit achitzon shebeir. The measurement starts from the last occupant house of the city. Afilu hayta midina keninveh, even if the city was as large as Nineveh. Well, okay, Nineveh is not the greatest city today anymore. So if it's as large as whatever, and any large city, Inside the city, you can walk as much as you want. The problem is walking outside the city. V'zeu l'din Torah. That's the midoraita, the biblical. Aval chachamim gadru geder. The chachamim put up a fence. V'asru shelo lelech yoter mi'alpayim amah chutz le'ir. And they restricted us from walking more than 2,000 amot, which is a sixth of the biblical. The biblical is 24,000. So is it more than a sixth? It's a twelfth. So 12 times that number is the biblical, 24,000 amot. The rabbinic is 2,000. Right? We'll see where all this comes from. But Sefer Chinuch makes this as a just broad presentation. And then he gets into the Shor Sheh Mitzvah, which is the mitzvah rationale, which is the reason why we even read the book Sefer Chinuch. Shenizkor v'neida sha'olam mechudash v'lo kadmon, so that we should remember that the world was created, it wasn't the eternity of the universe. G'moshe katuv b'ferush mitzvat Shabbat, as it says explicitly in, with regard to the mitzvah of Shabbat, ki sheshik yamim asa Hashem et ha-shamayim et ha-aretz et ha-yam v'kol ha-shabam v'yanach ma-mishvi. Al kain, therefore, lizkor ha-davar, to remember this fact, ro'uy lanu shenanuach b'makom echad, we should stay put in one place. Klomar shelo nelech b'derech rachok, we shouldn't go far. Rak derech tiyul va'oneg, if you want to take a little bit of a walk, what we call in Yiddish a shpatzir, so that's okay, that's nechmad. V'halichat shnei masamil ein bo torach rav, up to 10 kilometers, that's no big deal. But if you go beyond 10 kilometers, that is a big deal. And the proof is, if you have children or grandchildren that have ever gone through, the Golani unit or Tzanchanim unit, and they do a Masa Kumta at the end of their service, they walk a lot more than 10 kilometers, but 50 kilometers they're walking. And they're walking with backpacks with all the equipment and carrying one of the guys in, you know, interchangeably, because as if, God forbid, you're carrying a wounded. And it's and they on the verge of collapse, and each one has to help out the other one just to make sure it'll get over the finish line. Because if you collapse, you after you've gone through the whole course, you're dropped. So I was told once that one of my sons carried a guy twice his weight for a few kilometers because he just couldn't make it. And I asked him about this. He didn't want to talk about it. Okay, it's amazing. So what does it mean to walk derech tiyul ve'oneg in a completely different context? In a shiur that I gave last night, that had to do with the definition of doing something of a derech of a mitzvah on Shabbat. So it was an opinion in Shulchan Aruch that says, Ramo says this, that even taking a nice walk on Shabbat is considered a dvar mitzvah because it's onik Shabbat. It doesn't have to be something formal like Kriyat HaTorah or Tefillah B'Tzibur or let's say on Yom Tov at Kiyat Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, but just taking a nice walk is also considered a mitzvah. It's a nice thing to do. It's pleasurable as part of Onik Shabbat. So that's what the Sefer Chinuch says. You got to take a walk outside the city. It's nechmad. You know, it's nice. But let's not exaggerate. Don't go too far. And he says, at the end, he says, Nehegit b'chol makom b'chol zman. This is a mitzvah that's goes beyond the borders of Eretz Yisrael and beyond any historic context. Scharim and Kivot, men and women, you know, completely even on this one. Overa leha, somebody violates this. Afilu halach, afilu ama achat, yoshem yoter mishalosh parsaot, goes one ama beyond the requisite 24,000 amot, loked, then he gets malkot, because that's an avera. And if he goes beyond the boundary of 2,000 amot, lokem makat mardut derabanan. There is a concept of a rabbinic malkot also. And then he says, by the way, Rambanzal, this is his own Rebbe, katav ki kol ma ki ma she amar Rambam zal besefa mitzvot shelo, that which the Rambam says in his book of mitzvot, the isur trumin de oraita, that the prohibition of trumin is biblical, and it's biblical biyoter mi alpayim ama. The biblical distance is 2,000. But then in another book, the later book, V'chein Mashir Amar B'chiburo HaGadol, that's the Mishneh Torah, Perek of Zayin Hilchot Shabbat, Shechazar Mizeh, changed his mind. And he said, B'katav, Sheshi'ur Shel Torah Hi Shalosh Parsa'ot, now you see where the Sefer Chinuch gets this Shalosh Parsa'ot, that the Rambam did not change his mind in principle, all along suggested that it's biblical, but the only change was the distance factor. Where originally the Rambam said that the distance factor on a biblical level is 2,000 amot, and now he's saying that it's 24,000 amot, and 2,000 is only rabbinic. Says the Ramban, whether it's the first version or the second version, hakol ta'ud, it's all one big mistake. This is what Ramban says about the Rambam. All one big mistake. She'ein lanu isur tchumin d'oraita klal. There's no such thing from the Torah as a prohibition of tchum Shabbat. It doesn't exist. V'chein mitba'er b'mkomot harbei min hagmara shelanu shehi gmarat bavel she'anu sochim aleha b'chol dvareinu. And he says, I can prove it from so many sugiyot in Masech, in the Talmud Babli, the Babylonian Talmud, and that's the Talmud that we rely upon. The Ramban is already alluding to the fact that it could be the Rambam is using a different source, and we'll see it to be true. He's using the Talmud Yerushalmi, and the Ramban is saying, sorry, we're not going to rely on the Talmud Yerushalmi. Our tradition is based on the Talmud Bavli, and that's the bottom line that comes out from the Babylonian Talmud. And the Ramban brings many, many proofs to his point. Okay, so you have this machloket. So let's see how it pans out. In source number 2 is a Mishnah in Masechet Sotah, and it says Bo Beyom, and on that day, Darash Rabbi Akiva the following. Rabbi Akiva said the following drasha. What do you mean on that day? What happened on that day? It's like a known day. Chachamim say whenever anything is introduced as Bo Beyom, on that day, we know exactly which day we're talking about. It's the famous story of when Rabbi Gamliel was deposed from his position as the Nasi in the Sanhedrin. There was a coup d'etat in the Beit Midrash, and he was deposed. And that was the day that Rabbi Loza ben Azariah becomes Nasi. Essentially, remember there was a TV show, I'm trying to remember what it was called, King for a Day or something like that. Queen for a Day. Say thank you. King for a day, okay? Queen for a day, right? So to be Nasi for a day, because what happened was, they were looking for an appropriate candidate, and they did this. They set their eyes on Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, who was young, going to the Talmud Bavli, he was only 18 years old, going to the Yerushalmi, he was even 16 years old. But the story goes that he didn't accept the position until he took counsel with his wife. And his wife said, don't do it, because today they knocked off Rabbi Gamliel, tomorrow they're going to take you off. And his response was, to be queen for a day, that's a tremendous thing. So he said, even if it means just being Nasi for one day, it's worth it. So he takes it, and it's exactly what happened. Rabbi Gamliel asked Bechila from Rabbi Yeshua, and they put him back. Then there was a problem. What do you do with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? You know what I mean? He made him Nasi for a day. You cannot depose him, really, because you have to. So they made an arrangement, they compromised, that Rabbi Gamliel served as the Nasi, delivering the Shabbat Rasha 3 out of 4 weeks each month, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah played Nasi for once a month, and everybody was happy, maybe. But what's interesting is, and I can tell you that there were yeshivot, in my own growing up days, there were yeshivot where Rashi Yeshiva were deposed. I'll give you the most famous that I remember, was Yeshiva Tor Vadas in Brooklyn. Yeshiva Tor Vadas had an Adam Gadol, who was the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zichron Lebracha, one of the real mamash first-rate Gedolim, without it. He was deposed by the Tzevet. There was a coup d'etat in the Beit Midrash, and someone was appointed, whatever, I don't know the other one personally, Rav Gedalia Shor. Mezeda, he also passed away. But how can you have something like that? How can you have a Rosh Yeshiva of this stature deposed? But it happened. Sometimes Rosh Yeshiva has all kinds of policy issues, and his staff, you know, they just don't buy into it, they don't accept it, and they deposed him. And what happened was, by the way, Yeshiva Ponovich here in Yerushalayim Bnei Brak also went through no small amount of earthquakes in the Beit Midrash. And when those things happen, nobody is sitting and learning. I mean, this is like, everybody's schmoozing and talking and rumors and this and back. The great event of Rabbi Gamliel being deposed from his position, he doesn't walk out of the Beit Midrash. And everybody, they bring in more benches. And Rabbi Gamliel feels bad. He says, look what happened. I kept so many people away from the Beit Midrash because he had a policy. He wanted an exclusive yeshiva. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, open the doors. Somebody wants to come and learn. Let him sit and learn, you know. So it says, Hosifu Safsalim. They added benches. And Rabbi Gamliel felt bad. But look how many people he denied entry into the Beit Midrash. So that's a very humbling experience for Rabbi Gamliel. And then They were having all kinds of halachic discussions. There was no bittul Torah going on. And Rav Gamliel's there. He's part of the action. He's talking Torah. He's not insulted on a personal level. He took it hard, but he's still there. He doesn't walk out, you know, Breges and the Balaitik and everything like that. He's still part of the halachic discussion of the day. That's Boy B'Yoim. When the Mishnah says, and on that day, Rabbi Kiva got up and he said a big chiddush. What was the chiddush? Umadotem michutz la'ir et pa'at kedma alpayim ba'ama. In Parshat Mas'ei, with the end of Sefer Bamidbar, it talks about the perimeters around cities. And the perimeter around cities have certain status of the city for a variety of mitzvot. The question is, how much is the perimeter? Well, the Torah says 2,000 amot. On the east, 2,000 amot. On the north, 2,000 amot from all sides. But then there's another pasuk and says, Mikra Acher says, Mikir ha'ir v'chutza, from the outer wall, Elif ama saviv, 1,000 amot. Well, let's make up your mind. Is it 1,000 or 2,000? Rabbi Kiva says, Yif shalomar elif, you can't say it's 1,000, shekvar ne'mar alpayim ama, it says 2,000. V'yif shalomar alpayim ama, shekvar ne'mar elif ama. Well, how can you say it's 2,000 if it says 1,000? Which means we have to get our act together. Haketzad, how do we work this out? He says, elif ama migrash v'alpayim ama trum shabbat. That the Torah is referring to two different halachot. One has to do with migrashei ha'ir, that there is an extension of the city for a variety of halachot of the city, but for Tchum Shabbat, that's 1,000 amot around the city, but for Tchum Shabbat, it's 2,000 amot. So what Rabbi Akiva does, he reads the mitzvah of Tchum Shabbat into the text of the Chumash that defines the distance as 2,000 amot. And this becomes Rabbi Akiva's position on the subject. Number one, yes, Tchum Shabbat is a biblical prohibition. It's part of the 613. Two, the distance is defined in the Chumash itself. It's not something that was fabricated, but it's 2,000 amot, and he derives it from here. The Mishnah continues, Rabbi Leza ben Osher b'Yosei Glili, he says that it has nothing to do with Tchum Shabbat. Elef amam migrash, alpayim amas stot ukramim. That there are different halachot in terms of what's considered the extension of the city. So for some halachot it's 1,000, for some halachot it's 2,000, but has nothing to do with Tchum Shabbat. If you look at source 3, how does the Rambam handle this in his Mishnah commentary? Rabbi Akiva sofer, ki isur tchumim da'oraita. Rabbi Akiva believes that the whole issue of Tchum Shabbat is biblical. Ve'omer, and says, shehem mufurashim bakatuv. It's in the pasuk. Because he tries to resolve the contradiction of 1,000 against 2,000 by suggesting 1,000 is related to the city halachot and 2,000 is Tchum Shabbat. So it's almost as if the Torah said Tchum Shabbat alpayim ama. But Reb Leza says Tchumim d'Rabbanan. It's all rabbinic. Klomar she'ein lehem gvul Torah ela shi'ur Tchum Shabbat mid'Rabbanan. I underline this because this phrase Klomar, that is to say, she'ein lehem gvul Torah. There is no boundary in the Torah itself, but the measure of Tchum Shabbat is rabbinic, suggests that this Rabbi Eliezer is saying that Tchum Shabbat is biblical, except what's not in the Chumash is the distance. And the distance is rabbinic of 2,000 amot. This line that's underlined was an inclusion in the Rambam's text of Perush HaMishnah. When he originally wrote Perush HaMishnah, he did not say that. But he wrote, V'halacha k'rav leza b'no shel Rabbi Yosei Haglili sh'omer tchumin d'Rabbanan. The Rambam's original position on the subject of Tchum Shabbat is that it's rabbinic. Which means his original position. He's 23 years old until age 30. He writes the Perush HaMishnah, the commentary of the Mishnah. He's between 30 and 35, somewhere in that gap there, where he's writing the Sefer Mitzvot. And he's between age 35 and 45 when he writes the Mishnah Torah. And lo and behold, in each period, literary period of the Rambam, he's got three positions on the subject. Position number one is that it's rabbinic. It's rabbinic. He says it here. Shva lachakur blezer benosher blesai glili, shomer tchumin de rabbanan. Then, and I'll prove it. Look at the next source, number four. The Mishnah says in Masechet Sanhedrin, "Hamachalel et Shabbat, בדבר שחייבין על זדונו כרת ועל שגגתו חטאת, if you violate Shabbat, you desecrate Shabbat with an activity that if you do it on purpose, knowingly, but there were no two witnesses. If there are two witnesses and you don't know perfectly, it's a capital punishment offense. But if there are no witnesses, like today, there's no baked in to carry out capital punishment. So what's the punishment for Chilul Shabbat for a person who wittingly desecrates the Shabbat? It's karet. You don't want to be put in that position. Rambam believes it's the loss of Olam Haba. Val shigigato, but if you do it only be shogeg, shogeg means inadvertent, but it comes in two packages. I know it's forbidden, but I thought it was Friday. It can happen. You know, sometimes we wake up in the morning, you have the cup arbit nishta kadua, the head's not there clear yet, you don't have your coffee yet, and you put the radio on, because you don't want to hear the news, you know, because that's what you do every morning. And you're like, Shabbos. You hit yourself in the head, Shabbos. Then you get another affair, because you made yourself a wound, right? That's avera gorera avera. So just, you know, hit the wall and say Shabbos. That's one shaygeg. The other shaygeg is, it's Shabbat. I never knew that this was forbidden. Somebody says, what are you doing? It's Shabbat. Never heard of that malacha. That can happen also. Out of pure ignorance. You didn't learn all the dinim. So that's also shogeg. So it's shogeg. There's never a penalty of death on any level. But in the days of Beit HaMikdash, you have to bring a korban chatat. And what do you do today? You have to cry your heart out on Yom Kippur. The Kadosh Baruch Hu will forgive you. That's what Yom Kippur is for these kind of averot. So if a person desecrates Shabbat in an activity that chayavin al zdono karei v'shigoto chatat, so the Mishnah says, Rabbi Meir mechayev chachamim potrim. The question is, what is the chiyav, what is the ptar? Turn the page. Source 5. Mishnah zu the Rabbi Akiva. This Mishnah is in accordance with the view of Rabbi Akiva, who believes shesover sheyesh chilul Shabbat sheein chayavin al zdono karet val shigagato chatat. That there is an example. There's one example of Shabbat desecration that if you do it bemezid intentionally, it's karet, and if you do it inadvertently, it's chatat. We can't even think of any example, because every example of Chilul Shabbat falls into that category. So how can you have a scenario where it's something other than that? She says, according to Rabbi Akiva, it's Isur Trumin. Because the fish is Isur Trumin, the Rabbi Akiva, the writer. Rabbi Akiva believes that the whole issue of Trum Shabbat is biblical. Aval Chachamim argue and say, Isur Trumin de Rabbanan. The whole business of Isur Trumin is only a rabbinic add-on. Ve'inam korim oto chilul. It's not called Shabbat desecration. Shabbat desecration is only a biblical melacha activity. Ve'inam korim chilul ela hamlachot duvad shechayavim al zdonan karet v'ashigatan chatat kemo shenitbaer b'mkomo. As I will explain in Masechet Shabbat. And then he says v'alacha kechachamim. Which means the Rambam is taking a stand here that the halacha is in accordance with the view that Trum Shabbat is rabbinic. Is rabbinic. But we saw the Sefer HaChinuch, he says it's biblical, he counts it. And where is he getting it from? Clearly the Rambam. So what happens? Rambam moves to the next book. He's now over 30 years old, but before age 35, source number 6. There, Higanu. We got to the Sefer Mitzvot, source number 6. Source number 6 is Mitzvah Shin Kaha Shin Kaf Aleph, 321, in the list of 365 don'ts. Now, if it's here, it's clearly biblical. That's clear. Rambam doesn't bring rabbinics into this book. Shehiz hiranu, we were warned, shelo lahalech chutz l'tchum hamdina b'shabbat, should not walk beyond a certain measure of our city on Shabbat. V'omro, that's what it says in Parashat B'Shalach, al yetei ish mekomo b'yom shvi. Uba b'kabbalah, and the tradition of Torah Shebal Peh comes along and explains that this pasuk is not anchored exclusively in the biblical narrative of man falling 6 days and not falling on Shabbat, but it's a mitzvah for generations to come, and that the word mimkomo, what's the distance? Shegvul halicha hi asura mashenosaf alapayim amah chutzman amdina. The oral law tradition defines what mimkomo means. What does it mean, the distance outside the city? It means 2,000 amot. Afilu amah achat. Even if you go 2,001, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. Velechet arba alpaim amah lechol tzad mutar. You can go 2,000 on one side, 2,000 on the other side, 2,000 on the other side. You just can't go beyond 2,000 amot, which is the perimeter of the city, of the outside city. Velashon amechilta, and the midrash says, al yetzei ish mimkomo eilu alpaim amah. He has a source. A source in the Midrash Halacha, the Mechilta, and says clearly it's 2,000 amot. And then he quotes the Masechet Eruvin, and it says Amru. It says there in the name of Rabbi Akiva, Lokin al Isurei Trumin Dvar Torah, that you get Malkot, which means the bona fide Avera for Trum Shabbat, which is a Deoraita. So now you have second stage of Rambam's thinking. It is biblical, and its measurement is 2,000 amot, and he's signing up with Rabbi Akiva. This is what Rabbi Akiva said, and that's where I stand now. Legitimate that Rambam changes his mind. I mean, I wrote a whole doctrine on this, and the Rambam changes his mind 749 times between the Pirush HaMishnah and the Mishnah Torah, which is astonishing. I mean, I talked once to the Rav's son, Rav Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, who Rambam entered into his bloodstream together with mother's milk in his family. So and I asked him, I said, Rav Chaim, how many times do you think, in your own learning experience, that the Rambam changes his mind from Perusha Mishnah to Mishnah Torah? He says maybe 60, 70 times. That's just an educated guess. And I showed him the list. I said, it's 10 times that number. He flipped. And his brother-in-law, Rav Professor Isidore Yitzhak Twersky, in his Hebrew translation of the monumental work that he put out, Introduction to Mishneh Torah of the Rambam, cites my statistics already as being something that's borne out to be correct, that the Rambam changes his mind over and over and over again. And the question is why? Though I have all kinds of explanations to this. But one thing is clear. The Rambam writes his Mishnah commentary without many sources. Part of the book is written on the boat. And you know, he didn't have a laptop. And he didn't have a laptop that connected to Bar Ilan Project. And he's working with sources from his head that he studied when he was under 13 years old when he left Spain. And he's able to nevertheless put together a full Perush on the Mishnah. It's no wonder when he gets to Mitzrayim and he has full libraries, access to manuscripts, he makes many changes. Because he realized, I didn't get right, that I didn't get right, and so on. And he's not embarrassed. No, there's some people who they think it's a, you know, they have to worry about their own kavod, and they're not going to apologize to anybody that they made a mistake. But the Rambam didn't have a problem like that. His mind was dynamic, it was constantly in motion, and constantly thinking out the issue again. And my whole idea is that you don't have 749 changes. What you have is methodological changes. The Rambam changed his approach to certain sources on a fundamental level. As we'll see today, his approach to the Talmud Yerushalmi shifted. And each shift in methodological approach expresses itself between 50 and 100 examples. And that's I spoke to my Rebbe Rav Aaron Lichtenstein about this. And he thought this was a very, very important chidush. Because it's a chidush. To recognize that the Rambam shifted his methodological approach to certain svarim, and that generated so many of the changes. Nothing else. Because what goes on in a yeshiva, if Rosh Hashiva is giving a shir, and he sees that the Rambam chain is different than the Perusha Mishnah and the Mishnah Torah, he'll give an ad hoc type of split and say, in this case the Rambam meant this, and in that case the Rambam meant something else, but he'll never really get down to saying that Rambam changes his mind. Yet Rav Kapach, the Dayan Taimani, who did so much work on the Perush HaMishnah and the Sefer Mitzvot and the Mishnah Torah, is keenly aware of this phenomenon that I'm discussing, and he says that this happened so often. He doesn't have numbers, but he is aware of the phenomenon. So far we've seen two of the Rambam's positions, but now in source number 7 we see the third. And that's already in the Mishnah Torah. This is the Rambam between age 35 and 45. Hayotzei chutz l'tchum hamdina b'Shabbat. If you go outside the parameter of the city of Shabbat, lokeh, you get malkot. It's a bona fide lo ta'aseh, one of the don'ts. Shneimar, as it says, al yetzei ish mimkomo b'yom shvi'i. Makom zeh hu tchum ha'ir. The place doesn't mean your house. It doesn't mean outside your door. It means the city limits. V'lo natna Torah shi'ur l'tchum zeh. The Torah doesn't tell us what the distance is. Avul chachamim he'etiku, our chachamim received by oral tradition what it is. Shetchum zeh hu chutz l'shneim asar mil. is more than 12 mil, which is 24,000 amot. Keneged Machane Yisrael. Now we're getting the point. What is Machane Yisrael? Am Yisrael, what comes from Mitzrayim to Eretz Canaan. And let's say from Har Sinai, you know, that whole walk 40 years. You think they walked single file? They didn't walk single file. How many did they walk this way? Well, the Torah gives us some idea. The Mishkan was in the middle, and then around the Mishkan were the four families of Shevet Levi, three Levi and one Aaron HaKohen and his family. And then around them were three Shvatim on each side. So you had Reuven, Yisachar, and Zvulun leading, but then you had the other Shvatim. And we'll see in a moment that Talmud Yerushalmi figures out how wide was from one end to the other as they're all walking forward. How wide was it? It was about 11, 12 miles wide.
It's like a walking city.
Like a walking city. You're talking about 600,000 men between age 20 and above. You're talking about women. You're talking about children. So you're talking about millions of people. Millions of people. And they got to move. They have to move. So you can't. So they walked almost 10 to 12 miles wide forward. That's how they walked. Raviol Ben Nun is of the opinion, I just heard this last year, half a year ago, not even less than half a year, at the Tiyul, with part of the Yemei Yun Tanakh at the Gush. So Marif and I always sign up for Raviol. I don't care if we heard it once or twice, it's always good to hear Raviol. And he has these very pioneering ideas, and he's very bold and innovative. And the question was, how did Am Yisrael get to the foothold of Shechem, to Har Grizim and Har Eval, to give the bracha if they crossed by Yericho? That's not around the corner, Shechem. So he made a cheshbon, he made a calculation. How did we cross the Yarden? You think we crossed the Yarden single file? We still would be crossing it. We wouldn't be on the other side yet. I mean, it must have taken a year and a mitvach to cross the Yarden. So how did we do it? He said, well, we were 10, 12 miles wide. And we all crossed. So he makes a cheshbon, a geographic cheshbon, that the way Am Yisrael was set up and where they possibly crossed the Yarden, because there had to be low tide. It wasn't Kriyat Yamsuf. It had to be a low tide situation that they were able to walk across. Where it began at Yericho, because that's where Moshe Rabbeinu was. Al Arvot Yericho. Torah says that's where he ends his life. So that's where they are. But that's only one flank of Am Yisrael. But it pans out north. And the northern flank of Am Yisrael crossed the Yarden near Shechem. That's where it ends up. And that's where they're the first ones. You ever go on a tiyul? There are always some people who are the first ones to get there. Right? And then they rest. And then the nuch lepers, till they make it. And they make it. Then they finally get there. They need the rest. And then everybody gets up and starts walking. Right? That's why it's never good to be in the rear. You be at the front. You get more rest than anybody else. I like to be in the front. But some people are ma'asef l'chola machanot, Shevet Dan. They're the ones you have to round the caboose, you know, the round the end. Fine. So Raviol said, who made it to Har Grizim and Har Eval immediately after crossing the Yarden? The part of Am Yisrael that was on the extreme north of crossing the Yarden, and then everybody else made it. They eventually got there. But we were there already at Har Grizim and Har Eval very shortly after crossing the Yarden. So I mean, the way he sees things, he goes back on H.G. Wells' time machine and says, let's say if I was there, how did this look? He and Rav Yaakov Meidan, I mean, that's what they're doing. That's their brilliance. So what you have here is the Rambam. He says he's bringing a view that says Keneged Machane Yisrael, and if Keneged Machane Yisrael is this vast distance of 12 mil, which translates to 24,000 amot, to maybe 10, 12 miles wide, so that's very significant. Because from where do we learn the laws of Shabbat? How do we know that there are 39 active prohibited activities on Shabbat? It's derived from the construction of the Mishkan. the construction of the Mishkan. So it has something to do with Am Yisrael at the time of Yitziat Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. So this also is defined as, if you are within, from one shevet at the extreme right and one shevet at the extreme left, you're still in the city. So leaving the city means that distance. And if you just jump down to source number 10, this is the source in the Talmud Yerushalmi, Masechet Eruvin. Rabbi Shimon bar Kasana, b'shem Rabbi Acha, ein lecha machavar mikulam, there's nothing more clear than this, ela, tchum shneim asar mil kemachane Yisrael. The tchum Shabbat is measured by the width of the travels of Am Yisrael in the desert, which was 12 mil, which is 24,000 amot, and the Rambam adopted this line la halacha. That's what he says in source number 7.
But shouldn't he have said from the beginning of the Mishkan to the end would be 6? Because if you use the Mishkan as your base...
Okay, so the Mishkan in this particular is not the criteria, but it's Am Yisrael. The idea is that it's not something that that was made up in Eretz Yisrael. It already has some basis in Am Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim, going to Eretz Yisrael. And that becomes this is the source. It's clearly this is the source. The source number 10 in Yerushalmi is the source of what the Rambam writes in source number 7. Shetchum ze hu chutz l'shnei masar mil keneged machane Yisrael. V'kach amar lehem Moshe Rabbeinu, lo teitzu chutz l'machane. So they weren't cities yet. They were just a machane, a camp. Beyond the camp is beyond from one edge to the other. Umidivrei sofrim, but rabbinically, shelo yetzei adam chutz le'ir, ela ad alpayim amah. Aval chutz l'alpayim amah, asur, it's prohibited rabbinically, 2,000 amot. Shalpayim amah umigrash e'ir. Ah, he remembers the Mishnah in Masechet Sota also. The 2,000 amot is considered city limits for all kinds of halachot. So that's why Chazal pinned it on that pasuk in Parshat Mas'ei as an allusion, as a remez for rabbinic purposes only. Now, so what really happened here? We've got three positions of the Rambam. So, in source number 8, the Rambam was asked about this. Can you please clarify? Will the real Rambam please stand up? Right, that was to tell the truth. Right, there was another show. Will the real Rambam please stand up? So you see, the Rambam of the Parish of Mishnah, who fundamentally agrees with the person who wasn't born yet, the Ramban, that Tchum Shabbat is just rabbinic. Was the Rambam in line with Rabbi Akiva's position that Tchum Shabbat is biblical and it's measured biblically by 2,000 amot? Or is Tchum Shabbat biblical, but the 2,000 amot is rabbinic, but the biblical is 24,000 amot? Will the real Rambam please stand up? Now, you can argue and say, this is the Rambam from young, moving in his time. The last position of the Rambam is going to be the position of the Rambam, what he writes in Mishnah Torah. That's the book that he writes for halachic purpose of Am Yisrael. And if he wants to change his mind there, and he did that too occasionally, he will change it. In the manuscripts, we can see changes. But that's not as pronounced as we have in the Mishnah commentary. There we have so many changes. In the Sefer Mitzvot, here and there we have changes. But we find that he doesn't always go back to the Sefer Mitzvot to make the change. Where if he's later in life changing his halakha, changing his idea, and he incorporates the new idea in the Mishnah Torah, something that he wrote otherwise in the Mishnah commentary, he will generally go back to the Mishnah commentary manuscripts and correct it. But in the Sefer Mitzvot, he doesn't bother doing that. And here, in source number 8, he was asked about this. And he says, Shelot u'tshuvot. You know what's so important about the responsa literature? The Rambam takes us into his laboratory. He takes us into, now you know what was on his mind. We generally don't get that. Here and there, we're lucky that the Rambam was asked a question about a particular subject. It's interesting that there is a kovetz, a whole section of 24 letters that the Rambam responded to South France. What's so special about it is that these letters were written in Hebrew, because most of the letters that we have today were written in Judeo-Arabic and translated into Hebrew. But from South France, they didn't know Arabic. So it's one person, his name was Rabbi Yonatan He was a student of Rabbi Yonatan from Lunil. Lunil is a town in South France, in Provence. And he's a student of the Ravid, Rabbi Avraham ben David. Rabbi Avraham ben David is an older contemporary of the Rambam. And when he's an old man, the Mishnah Torah hits South France. And the Rambam's not an old man then. Ravid gets a copy before, pre-publishing edition. The Rambam didn't even finish the Sefer. Ravid already has some of the Mishnah Torah. And he says, what's going on? This man thinks he's writing about Kol HaTorah Kula, about everything. Let's see what this man has to say. And he starts flipping through the pages. This is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. And he takes issue with so many different things. And makes food for thought and fuel for thought and gives a lot of material for Rosh Yeshiva to give shiurim. Why the Ravid, Rabbi Avraham ben David, argues with the Rambam on this and on that? What's his basis? So, and sometimes he's even very sharp. He writes Zushtut, Zehevel. I mean, he uses words that are unbelievable. Now, this Ravid had many students. His students realized that there's now an opportunity to write letters to Egypt and we can get the Rambam's response. So, of course, the way they write the letters is not... Our Rebbe said that this was Hevel. This was Narishkai. They didn't write that. They wrote it in the most beautiful, respectful language. We have limited knowledge. We don't understand. Schorcha kaful min ha-shamayim. Your schar, your reward will be double for shamayim. Please help us elucidate that which we don't understand. Now it's putting the onus on us. We are a bunch of dummies. We don't understand what you wrote. Can you please write us a letter? And the Rambam writes a letter with 24 responses to 24 inquiries. And some of them, he said, you know what? You have a scribal mistake. This is what I really wrote. Sometimes he said you didn't understand something. And it's all very respectful. Very, very nice. So Rabbi Twersky writes in his book that the Rav Zichron Rocha has a tradition from his grandfather, Rav Chaim from Brisk. Rav Chaim didn't like the answers that the Rambam gave. He could have given better answers. Now that shows where a Lamdan from Brisk has self-confidence. You know, I don't care who it was. I don't like that answer. I can give a better answer. Because what's missing in the Rambam's responses is all the lundus, is all the intellectual gymnastics that go on in a shir of Brisk or Volozhin. It wasn't there. The Rambam gives very direct answers, you know, to the point, and doesn't leave a lot of schmaltz there to give a shir. Yeah, Raksha.
How did all of these changes that he evolved through get reflected in the lives of the ordinary Jew?
It's a very, very good question. Sometimes they impacted, because if the change filters now down to Shulchan Aruch, then obviously it's going to become the mainstream. Some of the changes did not filter down to Shulchan Aruch. So perhaps only part of Yemen, Rav Kapach's community, would adopt it, but nobody else. I mean, how many of you have been to a wedding and seen the chatan make the bracha under the chuppah for his own kiddushin? You may have seen it if you were at a Yemenite wedding. Because that's what Rav Kapach did. This is the Rambam's view. But nobody else does that. Nobody else does that. And there are many things that, specifically the Yemenite community, they adopted 99% of the Rambam. What happened to the 1%? Sometimes there was a conflict between what the Rambam said and the old tradition of Yemenite Jewry. And they favored those old traditions. Except that usually the old traditions matched what the Rambam wrote in Egypt. So that's why they like the Sefer. They really like the Sefer. So the truth is, each particular halacha has a history. What happened to it as we move on? So the Rambam was asked, and he says in source number 8, Vayoter nifla mashiyesh ba'otah ha'tshuva, heyoto Hashem yatmid uzo mitzvah mitzaveh otanu she'en ra'ui lohotzi hakatuv mipshuto. Rambam says, first thing is, you should know that there's a pshat in the pasuk, but we also have a halacha here. Ke'ilu chalaknu anachnu al zeh v'alo amarnu b'sefa mitzvot. But I wrote in my book, b'mitzvah kaf aleph u'shlosh meot b'mitzvot lo taseh, in mitzvah 3:21. Shamru al yetzi ish mekomo hu'azara al halicha b'shabbat ve'venu raya midivrehem lokim al eruvei tchumin dvar Torah. that I brought it in my book. If you check the book, you'll see that I brought a proof from the Gemara that Tchum Shabbat is biblical. V'iskamnu b'oto achibur, and I want you to understand that in that book, the Sefer Mitzvot, shelo nizkor bo ki im mitzvot toraita, only biblical mitzvahs are in that book. So if it's in the book, it's biblical. V'zeh achibur gam ken matzui etzlam bebavel. He's writing to the Babylonian Jewish community then. And he says, "V'lo bi'arti shem ha'efresh, v'lo bi'arti sham ha'efresh sheyesh bein alpayim amah bein yud belmid." I did not distinguish in those writings the difference between 2,000 amot and 12,000 and 24,000 amot, which is 12 mil wide. The fisha ein kavanat oto ha'sefer. The purpose of the book of mitzvot was ladat talmud ha'mitzvot, to study the derivation of the mitzvah from the pasuk. I wasn't so concerned with details in that book. So don't hold me to it. In my Mishnah Torah compilation, the purpose of Mishnah Torah was to be expansive and go into details. Sefer Mitzvot was not there for details. Which indicates the Rambam is writing to somebody, don't hold me to it. I didn't bother making that distinction. Now this is the Rambam writing. Yet, and he's giving the impression that I never, ever, ever thought that that Tchum Shabbat was of 2,000 amot was d'oraita. I never, ever thought that. The only thing is, it's not 100% sure. The Rambam did think that. He did think there was an intermediary stage where he thought, like Rabbi Akiva, that Tchum Shabbat is d'oraita and the 2,000 amot is also biblical. Take a look at source number 9. In his introduction to the Perush HaMishnah, when does a person write an introduction to a book? When you finish the book. Right? Everybody writes a doctorate knows. You write the introduction when you finish the book. Then you know what you wrote already. So then you can summarize and highlight what the book is all about. So the Rambam is writing this introduction to Perush HaMishnah that appears first in the book, but it's written last. He's already 30 years old. And he was probably putting together his Sefer Mitzvot at the time. And he's talking about prophecy. And he's telling us that prophecy is something that a Navi is not allowed to come and deviate from anything in the Chumash permanently. Because a Navi can come and suspend temporarily a mitzvah. That has happened. But a Navi cannot come and say, from now on, this mitzvah is no longer binding. Or from now on, a detail in a mitzvah has changed. From now on, you have to take 5 minim to the lulav and not 4 minim. From now on, just 3 minim to the lulav and not 4. Can't do that. That indicates immediately he's a false prophet. So what does he say here in source number 9? The Rambam could have illustrated what I just told you now with a million illustrations of the halacha. But he decides to use Tchum Shabbat. He says, "V'anavi hazeh atzmo shetzivanu, b'mat shetzivanu lasot b'yom hazeh shu Shabbat." And the prophet that is now going to explain using prophecy, and he's saying that there's a whole idea of Shabbat. V'kiyamnu dvarav, and we've established that indeed he is a bona fide prophet. Im yomar, if this prophet now says shetchum Shabbat is alpayim pachot ama, is one notch less than alpayim 2,000 amot, or alpayim ve'ama, or tchum Shabbat is one notch over 2,000 amot. V'yiches ha'davar mitzad ha'nevuah, and relies on his prophecy. Lo shenir'eh lo b'derech ha'iyun v'adin, harei zeh navi sheker u'mitato b'chenek. This is a false prophet. What is he saying? He's using the example of 2,000 amot as being the yardstick of an absolute halakha. And if it's one more or one less, the man's a navi sheker. Would the Rambam have used an example that's only rabbinic to make this point? His whole point is that if he's challenging a biblical mitzvah with a little greater or less, that's a false prophet. So there's no question at the end of the writing of the Mishnah commentary, he is in sync of what he wrote in source number 6, and that's the Sefer Mitzvot, that indeed there is Tchum Shabbat and it's biblical. So what we actually have here is 3 stages in the Rambam's thinking. His early stage is his Perush HaMishnah, which I even have another source, that's source number 11, which the subject is a completely different subject, but the Rambam mentions a bunch of things that are rabbinic, לפי שקיום שטרות דרבנן ותקנת כתובה מנה מתיים ותחומין and other things. He just lists off a bunch of things that are all rabbinic and he throws in Tchum Shabbos into this category. The Rambam in his earliest thinking believes that Tchum Shabbat is rabbinic, no different than what the Ramban ultimately says. He changes his mind at about age 30 when he's completing the Perush HaMishnah, when he's writing the Sefer Mitzvot. He says, no, it's biblical. And it's biblical, it's measured by 2,000 amot. When he's 35, 45, he says, you know what? It's not measured by 2,000 amot. I'm going to adopt the Yerushalmi here. It's measured by 24,000 amot. And then he goes back to the Sefer Mitzvot and he tries to doctor up the Nusach a little bit to make it a little bit fit better. Why does he adopt the Yerushalmi? And I can tell you, the Rambam changes his mind using the Yerushalmi at least 50, maybe 70 times. In the course of his changes, the Rambam wanted to establish, or the Rambam wanted to deflate the existing Geonim in Bavel, in Baghdad, of his day, who assumed that they had the unique leadership in the world of Torah. And the Rambam felt that that era had come to an end already. And the way the Rambam was going to do this was by raising the pedestal of the Talmud Yerushalmi that was not used by the Geonim of Bavel, hardly used, and he was going to elevate it to nearly the same level as the status of the Talmud Bavli. It's a revolution in Halakha, nothing less than that. And this is just one example of that. So you see that the Sefer Mitzvot becomes a pivotal Sefer for this entire discussion. Okay, I hope I didn't confuse you too much. Kana wants to make an announcement.
Good morning. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Okay. So as long as Rabbi Adler invited me here, I will take this opportunity